This conversation with Kenneth Steffen took place at his home in Moscow on January 13, 1976. The interviewer is Sam Schrager.
Drugstore, and I guess the building is gone when the Idaho First National Bank, or is another, who is in that, right next to Hodgins, before you get to Hodgins.
Is that the cross, now that old, that bookstore, that religious bookstore?
No, that's on past, that's where the barbershop was.
Mean the First National Bank?
Yeah.
In the corner.
Well, it was the First National Bank had a big building there, and the next one's Collins, Orleans Hardware.
Uh-huh.
Now it's just Orleans, and Collins one time was a sheriff in Moscow years ago, Collins was, see? That's something of interest.
Well, he was a sheriff when,
Will didn't shoot, yeah.
I'd heard he kept out of the way that day.
Well, he's a pretty fat man. I just knew him. He had a big belly on. But he was all right, old Joe was. He used to sport me when I was a kid. And I'll tell you why. Just a quarter of a mile east of where we live, out there by the cemetery now, you know where that service station is in the corner of Mountain View Road, where the house burnt down. Well, that was a city dump ground. At that time, all paint thinners and lots of stuff like that came in 50-gallon drum. And so, of course, you know, they haul their junk out the junkyard, and syrup all comes in tins, they did. All come in tins, from quarts up to half a gallon and gallon, see? Well, I go up to the dump ground there, and I see them haul out three or four loads of stuff, and I go up there and search around and find all these tins, the cans. Then I take them in, and I get from 2 to 5 cents a piece from the hardware store for them to put their stuff in, see? Put this in. So it made quite a little bit of money, you know?
Collins would take whatever you...
I had three hardware stores. You know where the telephone building is? At the Scatterball building, they had a hardware store there, and on right across the street was Franz for the Egan building is, you know, that was another hardware store. Now, Ward started his hardware store later on years up in the tuna building up there, see? But you see in those pictures I showed you there, where the Williamson went up there to the other room up there, you know, where they do it.
Oh, there.
Well, it might be underneath there. Now, let me see. No, this isn't what did I do with that building? You see, here's where Williamson is down here. Mm-hmm. Now, see up in here?
Yeah.
Up there, here's the corner drugstore. Now, that's taking probably, he went out of business up there right after World War II. So, he invested in a lot of land and so on. I guess he was I just think he lost out on the thing.
That's what I've heard.
Davy's store and so on. Well,
what was Williamson's store like? Was it a good one?
Yeah, he had groceries. Davy's had groceries too. Davy's store had groceries.
Was Williamson's more of a working man's place than David's?
I don't really know.
I
tell you, he was both of them were first class Jews. Williamson was a Jew, so was David, though, a man of Jews, see? Yeah. Some of the David boys married Gentiles, some of them married Jewish girls, see? Yeah, so it's one of those things, see?
Oh, I didn't know. They really, David's were Jewish
there
people, huh?
Isn't David a Jew name?
Yeah, I guess it is.
Well, I'm pretty sure. Huh. Now, here's a picture of my way through the doctor in Moscow when Richard was a tiny baby. And she lived to 55, though. Operation after operation, all those kind of things.
Where did you meet her?
Right here in Moscow. My wife, native Moscow. Her name is Muslet. You know John Muslet, the Bank of Idaho? Manager of the Bank of Idaho?
I know of him. I know the Muslet's family from, I know they were out in Troy there.
About the old man used to, grandpa used to teach school. Then Ivan did a little farming out there one time, and one time her father had the theater in Troy, Ivan did. But John Muslet, his father, Leo, was a brother to my wife, see? And John's the manager of the bank down here, Idaho. But you wanted that one picture with it?
You have an extra copy.
Yeah, go ahead.
Why
don't you check with Lola about those schools? Now, the way the schools was is this. When I first started to school, of where that annex that the high school is down there got built on, you know, that really made that so they could build it up to another story. Need to, well, set the school there. There's three rooms downstairs and three upstairs in it, and then the basement went down each side, girls on one and boys on the other one. I went inside the school there, I was only 5 years old. I got down on the girls one the first time they told it. they didn't do much about it, I guess. They say they showed me where to go. But anyway, I went to first and second grade there for that building there. Then they built up there at 730 8th Street in Pearl Cornwell. It lives in the place. It did own it, but she sold it. That was the next school I went to, and it had the third grade in there, I think. Third and maybe the fourth. But then the high school, which is now the old building across where the office is, across north of the high school, you know, in there, that building. That was built about 1910, I think. I went there to school for the fifth and sixth grade, but the seventh and eighth I went to the Irving School. And during that time, I can't tell you what year it was, the Russell School burnt. The Russell School was both of them square buildings. Now they're on that picture that I gave to Lola Clyde, and she's supposed to give it to
I'm sure she did.
Well, he's supposed to enlarge it. Yeah. But where the Irving School sat, it was all poplars around there, and you can, if you enlarge it, you wouldn't get to see the school so damn much in account of the poplar trees, you know. Then after they tore it all down, the Russell School burnt. Then they tore the, there was only four rooms in each building, see. And I went to the 7th and 8th grade at both at the Irving School, and that's as far as I got in school, had to work. But it was a wooden building, burnt coal in the furnace, you know. And, you know, I mean, a wood. I had that long, basement's all filled with wood every fall was, you know, like then. But those four pictures are on it, see.
Did you work when you were a kid while you were in school too?
To school?
Yeah.
Well,
did you
we didn't
work around.
Well, I had summer months in schools out in summer months. The farmers used to hire you and work the goddamn hell out of you, hoeing gardens, slopping the hogs, milking the cow. You worked from 5 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock at night, most of the batter, for $1 a day. Goddamn, I went out and did it, you know. But I thought about it afterwards. Jesus Christ, my farmers are damn fools to make let you to go out and work something like that. You know, they could. You know, it was really.
Did they board you, or did you just
Oh, yeah. You know, we stayed there. They boarded the room, yeah, so on like that, yeah. The last time I worked on a farm, I came out of the service one time and landed down in Oregon, Enterprise, Oregon. Went to work for a guy down there. He had a shot of sheep and had some cow, and they wanted a hay ground, this and that. $60 a month, got my boarding room. In the winter months, but I guess you still had to feed those cows and sheep and milk them, but you only got $40. So I stayed 1 year, see, down there. But I had a lot of little fun for this reason. You got that thing running?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to tell you that.
Oh, come on.
No, no.
Okay, tell me. I'll turn it off.
You can all do it. That boy, man, he's been on his own since he's 19, about 20. And he got 2 years in university, too. You know.
But you taught the kids to sew?
Well, we didn't have a sewing machine though, but I mean they could put the buttons on, you know, handwork so on. I got an outfit in there like that. But we didn't have a sewing machine either, you know. But they did do the laundry up real good, and they had iron, they'd iron their stuff. They went to school with their pants ironed and their shirts ironed, looking good all the time. I bet you. And the guy can cook. The youngest boy was in here. He didn't go from scratch, but he would fix up cakes all the time, you know, like just bought cakes and mixed and so on. He fixed them up like that, and so the other boys did that. The oldest boy, he was crazy about cars and things, but I got him into a senior in high school, and that's as far as I get him. But then he got in the National Guard, and they got him in the service, and he got one of those Army high school diplomas, and the 6 months he put in there down in Fort Ord, boy, hell, he anything in his hands. First-class mechanic, knocking out maybe $1,200 a month.
You think the kids missed having a mother a lot?
Well, they did. They did. They must be. They must be that they missed having a mother around. See? But now the oldest two, they got married. This boy isn't. So he probably was the one that missed more. You know, I used to take him with me all the time in the deliveries and like that. And then when they got old enough to drive, they all had cars to drive or trucks to pick up, so on. So they made out all right. Yes, I've been, Louise passed away in 55. My mother, I took care of my mother for 19 years too, and she died in 56.
You must have, You must have had to put a lot more into raising the kids than most fathers ever do. You know, most of them leave it all to the wife.
Well, I tell you, I made a lot of mistakes, too. I look back on it now. I ended up in this place just to go have a house. I could have, just, well, it wouldn't cost me any more, probably. I had two pickups and brand new, and Louis' illness at the time cost me about $10,000, but today it would cost you $50,000 or $60,000.
That's right.
But I took the boys with me on this delivery system. And, you know, that way they didn't have to be running by themselves, see? They all have workmates. You know, light stuff they carry into houses, things like that. I had 8 grocery stores and 1 dry goods store I delivered for. See? I had 3 pickups going part-time for early morning to the university. And then 2 afterwards, see? I had a university boy, Dennis, trying to find something better. You know, take over, because I had a lot of short, at that time we had the charging maternities and co-ops up there to deliver to. They didn't have the wholesalers coming in on like they got now, see? But I had that up to 72 myself, and then I turned it over to the youngest boy, and I still got Davy's store, and I've had him since 1944.
Where did you deliver from? Did you deliver for any stores in particular?
Oh, yes, all the grocery stores. Modern Way, I was on Main Street, and I delivered for Rawlson Grocery. I had the Sanitary Market up there, and Willis's Grocery. I had Bill's Grocery, you know, all those stores like that, see? And, I can't remember all I did have. I haven't even got the books anymore, but, yeah, it was a good little business.
What do you remember about them early grocery stores in Moscow when you were a kid? What was there in town? They had a bunch of grocery stores then.
Well, they're all little home-owned stores. See, home-owned stores, what they were. They didn't have these big stores like you got nowadays. Yeah, but things were, well, they say, for instance, you go in 2 bits worth of beans and they had them in a bin, put her on the scale and weigh it up, see? Sugar, same damn way, see? Rice, all coming 50, 100-pound sacks maybe, see? Guys like that. Bread, you never got any bread in a grocery store. You had a bakery, though. We had 2 bakeries going. But then eventually, you know how your bakeries come on and they put it in a grocery store. But I go back in the day when we didn't have that. I worked for Charlie Schroeder down there for the bakery. You know the bakery on 3rd Street now in? Charlie Schroeder, I guess, started. I don't know if he started or not, but he must have. He owned it. I was a kid about 12 years old. He had these ovens to bake in, and of course they bring that wood into him. That's all they had in those days, wood, and there's 4-foot. Wood. And Harry put me out there to split that damn stuff up and up so it was burning and that thing. Oh, Jesus, that was hard work, you know. I got
what'd
for a buck a day.
What'd you do? Did you have a sweet
I had
saw?
I had a maul and a wedge and an axe, see? And you know that in that 4-foot wood, they're pretty big chunks, you know.
You had to chop it with the axe.
Split it, you know, like that. So he shoved it in 4 feet at a time, see? But he got to get it down to smaller pieces, you know, so it burned better, see? A big old oven in there now. Of course, they're all electric now, you know.
So your job was splitting.
Yeah, I did that, and then I washed up the pans, and the big all the thing, you know, like all the pans, you know. I guess it mix in, you know, stuff like that. I wash all them too. It was, you know, everything. Well, you didn't wash up the bread pans. They bake bread in. They don't wash them up, you know. He greases them. He did.
So you didn't. You've done the mixing bowls.
Mixing bowls, all that kind of stuff like that.
What'd you make for doing that?
$1 a day. 6 days a week.
It sounds like they got the kids for slave labor in those days.
Yeah, but you know something? I went over to Davy's department store there, and they have something on there, and I bought my first pair of long pants, a suit, for $4. I was making $6 a week. I got paid $4 for it. 2 pantsuit, with no vest to it. First pair of long pants.
What do you mean? Well, before that, you'd worn them, what do they call them?
Knickers. Knickers at the knees, yeah. Yeah, we're niggers.
Of course,
overalls like that come down long, see?
Is that what made you man when you started wearing long pants instead of niggers?
I don't know. It was style. I guess kids wore them up to the 15, 16 years old at one time, those niggers. I had a blue serge suit called Oxford. Had a belt across the back and two pair of pants. And they got it for penny store. Now, I'll tell you what it cost me. I can show you the place now where we lived out there in the country. The creek come, the bridge on Mountain Road there, there's a bridge there, and then it went right through our place and came out, and there's another bridge and went out through the Stadtball field, turned around and come right back through that road, the bridge there, and came on down through, and it crossed, and that cement bridge out there on White Avenue now is the only one there, see, on White Avenue, see, but there was 2 more up there. Well, they changed the creek from our place down there for a quarter of a mile, knocked off two bridges, eh? And I carried water for the men. For the day, it took teams and horses, you know, and scrapers. Mm-hmm. When I got through them, at that time, J.C. Penney's store was in where, in that picture you saw, Williamson's department store was in there then, see? Golden Rule started up there in the Billings store down now, where the Weisel, or I mean now is Harry Damon has his insurance thing, but the whole thing come out there to the street, you know, that they just built a lower made office around there. You speak two stories better than that. Penny started in there called the Golden Rule. Well, Mother brought me to town, and we got a warrant from the county for $12. I got this Oxford suit, two pair of trousers. I got a pair of shoes and two pair of long socks come up in here. And I said, I don't think it's been quite the $12. Just stop to think. That big clothes were those days, you know. Of course, Mother made most of your shirts for us, you know. She bought the goods, you know, and she sewed real good. You know, made most of things like that.
Yeah. When you went out to Wenatchee and working in the harvest and that kind of thing, I was thinking about that. That was real interesting to me, what you told me. I was wondering more about that. I was wondering about what kind of clothes you took on
dress clothes. Well, I had to work clothes, you know. In those days, I didn't wear a bib overalls, just, you know, regular dungarees. I mean, you know, belt. I, you know, Levi's at that time, they cost only maybe 79, 89 cents a pair. I bought the overalls here from Penny Store after I come back here in 37 for way less than a dollar a pair. Rent a room, we would generally eat. At that time, I didn't do much cooking. I did some, but I generally eat in a restaurant, see? Eat breakfast and take my lunch and come back at night. Well, we didn't make much money. We were knocking out 5 cents a box and make between $5 and $6 a day, see, on picking apple over there.
What did most of the people do who were, I mean, like, say you take, like, the families that were picking. I imagine there were a lot of families with kids and everything. Where did they stay?
Not too many. Some of them camped out. Sometimes some orchards had a place for some people to stay at, had rain, you know. Some people had a big orchard. There's big orchards over there at that time, too. I guess they are yet. Say, you know this man Johnson, David Johnson, that wrote this article on this second?
I don't know him, no. You?
No, I tell you, I was going to ask him to come down if he wanted to write a little history I got somebody that should write. I got some clippings in here of it. You remember reading about General Mitchell being court-martialed? He was a general army. He advocated, you know, of the airplane and so on. And after World War II was over with, a captured German vessel way. He sent his planes over, you know, and dropped bombs onto the sunk, see? And of course, the admirals and the generals got in the Army and the Navy, they didn't want to do away with the battleships or anything, you know, which proved, you know, fair afterward, because we got our air force now, does more damage than a battleship could do, you know, possibly. Well, they court-martialed Billy Mitchell in 23, I think it was, and demoted him or did something, you know.
For doing what? What did he do?
Well, he's advocated, you know, that. He was pretty well outspoken about building these warships, you know, and so on. Hmm? In fact, as I was on a ship that was built in 1920, the old Tennessee and the California, both were built in 1920. Of course, they're in mothballs now. They're in the up. They sunk some of the ships in Pearl Harbor. But anyway, the Navy, you know, they thought they'd pull something. Now this is in 1925. The government of the United States loaned, according to all the information I can remember and that I heard, Australia some money. Now, way back in about 1907, 1908, the White Fleet had made a goodwill trip to Australia. That was all sailing ships. They called it the White Fleet. See? But we went over there in 1925 with the East Coast battleships and the West Coast battleships, destroyers, water tenders, supply ships, and all that kind of stuff. I don't know how many went. We went to Sydney in Australia and Brisbane, and then we went over to Auckland, New Zealand, and I can't remember the other city. Stopped at a goodwill tour of them. Well, during that time, the Navy said, "Well, we'll do something." So, a fellow named Rogers, I don't know whether he's a commander or just a lieutenant, or I think he's a lieutenant commander, and his navigator, and I don't think there's three of them. They loaded them up in a seaplane to make the first flight to Hawaiian Isles, the first flight, and they went down the drink. But they did it just right. We're coming back, and all the ships went on navigation, you know, like longitude, latitude, certain way. But I got a submarine that picked him up, found him, and towed him in Honolulu. I got the two clippings of two different Honolulu advertisers there telling all about the rescue and some pictures. But that's 51 years old this July, and they're pretty well, it should be taken, use a, what do you call it, a copier and copy it, see?
Yeah, they should be copied.
Yeah, you know. Well, it's fiction what it is, you know. But as far as that goes, you know. But she made a lot of children's books, wrote a lot of them for that, and so on. Mm-hmm. But it was really, really taken partly from Moscow, as far as that goes, because her aunt, Carolyn Field, lived here. You know, poor girl, woman, bad guy, been dead 3 days before they found her.
Oh.
Well, the home's up there on South Polk Street in the 300 block, about either 315 or 321 or something like that it was, see? Yeah. But, now I think she was an aunt, see?
Yeah, she was.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. There was two girls old Doc had, I think, if I remember right, in the story. Where I lived out there in Barn by the cemetery, Roses, my grandmother, Will's mother, and flowers, my God, they had so many of them. People come and walk, they walk through the cemetery a lot. My mother used to give flowers away to many, many women to come by there, taking flowers up to the cemetery.
Your mother?
My mother did. He would come there in 1902, see? Will did the shooting in 1901, see? And it was August the 4th. He's buried over here in Bowman. Got a headstone, his grave and everything. And my father, Helen tried to get him buried in the Masonic Lodge ground there, you know, ready to go out of home and grab ship over that hill. They got a cemetery up there. And he was amazing. They didn't like that, see? Because old Doc about the only one around town here in the country did any butchering, you know? So it couldn't be one, so she bought her property there, see?
Wait a minute, Doc was the only one that did any butchering, you mean doctoring?
Well, shit, he didn't say, he got well without him, just well as you did with him, see, as far as that. We did back in those days just like a lawyer. They studied under a doctor, they didn't have no schools, goddamn. What they learned, see? What they did. I was about the size of it, see? They didn't have schools back in there like they got now. Same like how many lawyers study? And they come out all right on it, a lot of them did too. There's some damn good ones. There was Ada Rogers St. John talks about her father. He did the same thing in California. God, he was a brilliant attorney, by God, and he did some wonderful work. You know, he did the same thing.
He learned it from another guy?
Yeah, on Harvey Smith's father here in Moscow. He did the same thing. He didn't go to court much, you know, but Harvey Smith got to be an engineer, but he was attorney of Harvey Smith's dad. He's dead now. Harvey's up around 90 and he passed away. You might have heard of him, knew him, didn't you?
Yeah,
Isabel, why? Well, I think that they're related to the Davids. I think they're cousins, I believe they are, too, one way. But, you know, they just, they go into the law office and read the book and then go along with assistant courts and things like that. And that's how they picked it up. And I suppose they did just about as good. But doctors did quite a bit the same thing, you know. Like that. Yeah, they did all right. But they have to give them a lot of credit, but I guess they tried a lot of things, but they know what they're doing or not, I guess. But did you see that in there about the cars? You
didn't I go took through? A little quick look at it.
Well, show you something.
It's that's one of the first stories. Are you looking at the ads?
I was going to show you something, Ben. Here's something that you might take a little look at. I've had some of these in my day, too. I had this car. Here, this one.
The Touring Ford for $290, huh?
Yeah. See this? That's FOB. See this one up here, 260? Yeah. Some idea. I thought I might take that out and ask the four people out there that wanted to copy it off. Yeah. Those things, you know, you keep a lot of old junky things around, me not doing any good, but they're things you have.
It's better to save them than throw them out, I'll tell you.
Well, I wish I could have had enough brain to keep a lot of things I had. You know, somebody had $1 million here, started about 1905 or 6, and bought up all these cars. They weren't very, he could have bought them up easy. He could have maybe, I don't know how many cars he'd have, how much money they'd be worth. They'd be worth at least 100 times more than what he had to pay for them, you know. Now, and this guy down here, I think it's Reno, that has this there, collection of old cars, you know. You know, one time I had an old Hudson car that was a right-hand drive, and the gear shift was outside. I had it.
On the right-hand side?
On the right-hand drive. Yeah, it wasn't the left-hand drive, and the gear shift had slots for the gear shift on the outside of the car in there. Of course, it didn't have no top on it. The one I had. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of old-timers. Now, take for instance, the Packard, it was a pretty good old car, but couldn't make it. The Studebaker wasn't too bad. They started making wagons, went in that. They went belly up. Of course, they went to Canada to try to, I guess, for cheaper labor or something, try to make it. They couldn't, but the Studebaker car was a pretty good little car at one time. And the best little car...
You took your car, like the cars you had, them early cars, and went driving around the country here. What were the roads like then? What was it like? Was it hard to get around?
Oh, yes. I went to Spokane with a T Model Ford, and the ruts in the road, if they didn't grade it very often, they put sand on it. Yeah, you couldn't have got up in the winter, much save your soul from hell. You know how they started the freight in this country here, inland motor freight? This is now Garrett's and how they started. Well, I'll tell you, Carl Smith in town here had an old solid rubber wheel truck. He was doing business in town as a transfer. The guy over Pluth had one outfit, did work around there. Garfield had one, see? Oaksdale, Rosalia. And they all got together, bang, guys, and wouldn't bring it part way and go on, bang, guys, on these roads and freight and come into Moscow. And it's inland motor freight, it was. And their first office was where the fire station is down there now, in that building there.
Well, what do you mean they'd only bring it part way?
Old trucks, they didn't run clear through in Spokane down here till later on they got started.
You mean they'd take it down a ways and then they'd unload it and put it in another truck?
Yeah, they could. They didn't have too much in those days. Freight's come in on there. Every day, my gosh, I went down to the depots here and picked up freight. You know what it was? All these stores had their groceries and everything else come in. Now, I had, working for my brother-in-law at the time, he had a David store and he had a different grocery store, so we picked up those things and they paid so much. We'd pay and make $4 or $5 in freight money in the morning, see? And that wasn't so bad back in those days. I'm going back when I was a pissy-ass kid, you might see, fooling around. But that's how stuff comes to town, but the railroad brought in all the freight, you know. We had them. I don't know, several warehouses in here owned privately, you know, where wheat. There isn't a single one in the country today, all co-ops.
Wasn't Mark P. Miller, didn't he have
Mark P. Miller had a big place, he made flour. I bought a lot of Mark P. Miller's flour for $1.25, 50 pounds. You know, damn good flour. My mother made good bread out of it. I know a lot of people did. Of course, you got a lot of advertising, you got snow flour, drifted snow, and you got different kinds coming in now, you know, like that. It's only one way you mill a flour anyway, you know, about all this stuff. It's the wheat. You get the heart, just different kind of wheat.
So this wheat here was just as good as the flour was just...
Yeah, this kind of wheat we got here now, at that time, I don't know what it is now, back at that time, it would do all right, but now they're raising wheat in this country out here now that we export it to Japan and different countries to make noodles and all kinds of stuff out of it, see? It's a different kind of a wheat, see? But the hard wheat, good hard wheat, Montana raises a lot of good hard wheat, see? For flour, more than we do over here in Washington and Idaho, you know. But I don't understand too much about it, though, at that. Mm-hmm. Well, you got a little more to do, huh? What you working on? Well, that picture do you any good going ahead? But
I figure I'm gonna be working until this summer, and I ought to be done then. The interviewing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know too much to tell about it as far as that goes. I'm not the oldest one around Moscow. Oh, yeah.
But you remember the town pretty well in the early days, when you were young, yeah. Not the real early days.
Not yet. Well, my grandparents come here a year or two after my folks did, and they bought down Asbury Street, and we owned that house. My mother sold it in 45. We sold it, and we went out and rented a place, an apartment house afterwards, but we should have bought it, but we didn't. But things have changed, you know. Now, when I first come to town, you take, for instance, all wooden sidewalk. You know, when I remember, all wooden. You take Main Street, for instance, from the Mosque Hotel South. You asked all those people onto the left, either west side that's got a basin, so they don't have to have sump pumps in there on account of the springs, you know. And I remember one time it was some kind of a celebration, right? We stood on the sidewalk right in front of the hotel. The sidewalk was up about, you know, 3 feet, doesn't matter, or the Moscow Hotel is. And they had these things fixed up. Now, you've been to, have you ever been to these gym cannons?
I've seen them, but not.
Well, they had a pole and pointed. The guy had come by and they had these rings on the thing and it tried to spear them, see? Had, oh, would they thunder by them? And big horses, they rode horses, you know, weighed, 1,000 to 1,200 pounds back those days. They're really good horses, right? Okay. And we stood up on that wood walk and they come along there. I remember that real well. And then on down in the south where Charlie Blanchard had a lot there. Now what's in the shoe shop? A shoe shop on South Main Street in about the same building. Vicki and Nick's is over there. Anyway, they put up a wooden place in there and they had a dances on or 4th of July in there, see? You know, it's a little low down, about 4 foot drop into it. You walk down to it. They had dances there, you know. And right across on 6th Street there where Neely's are, with Butterfield Elder and his machinery. And he had the side was up high, but he also had his platform built up in there. And about it. You know where the Christian church was tore down, the city bought the property rights exactly east of the post office. They used to put a tent up every once in a while, but then the churches used to have a battle once in a while too. Back in those days, the preachers all got up and give hell to the Mormons, give hell to the Catholics, you know, in the churches, you know, like that. Well, my mother took us kids till I got old enough, but I got to say no. But anyway, I'll tell you a little story. You know Robert Peterson, the attorney in Moscow?
Oh, wait a minute. This is a story about Klaus? You told me that story. I remember that. You
about
told me
Sliver,
about
it. Yeah. Yeah, that happened, but they said that. Because they brought in shavings and mill stuff, you know, sawdust and so on, and they put it down on the ground of the spring in a tent on that ground where the old Christian church was. My uncle built that Christian church where I went. He went to church all day Sunday, very good, and all night Sunday. All day Sunday and all night, late awake, see who he beat the rest of the week out or something.
Which uncle was that?
Oh, P.S. Alberts.
Well, when, didn't they scream about dancing and drinking too? I thought they were really
Yes. And they prohibition come in when the boys were all overseas, you know, during World War I, see? When they voted in prohibition. Then it took quite a little while until we got Roosevelt in there. And he came back and he was elected in 1932 and took office in 1933. Then they repealed it, see? It hurt, come on real good. That's when I went down to Oregon in the fall, down to Enterprise, and I stayed that winter. And I went out and cut wood in the woods for there was four of us. Dead wood, we got $1 a cord delivered with teams and four horses up to a highway where a guy with a truck could haul two cars at a time into town. He sold it for $9. He hauled two cars at a time, but we got $1 a piece and he furnished our groceries. Most of course we killed our deer out there, our meats, you know. It's like that. There's lots of deer at those times. But I did some of that quite a bit that winter, and it was damn hard. Then I went to work on a ranch down there, sheep and cattle and so on. And I stayed up, I was 29, I stayed all the year of 30, up into the spring of 31. And then I left it, see. Then I went back into service. I said, just working for $40 a month, and your board and room isn't so damn good, 11, 12 hours a day. I went back into service. And of course, the second enlistment, I got up to corporal right away. That's $42 a month in your board and room, and clothing and everything, and medical expenses. Then I got to take a little trip too. Yeah.
A little trip overseas, huh?
Yeah, I went to work twice. I went to Australia. I'm an old shellback. I crossed the equator twice. Yeah. And I crossed the international date line twice too. Yeah.
When you were out there in eastern Washington around Wenatchee, was that a lot like it was around here at the same time?
Well, no, I wasn't there too much. Just you know, a month or two in the fall, a month, you know, picking up. That's all. Just go there. Like, you know, you guys come here to go through harvest, you know, and so on. I used to go down one time, down around the dusk and on through in there. You'd get in a week or two harvesting. They'd come a week earlier or so, and then move on up this way, see? End up in this country up here, see? You could harvesting. At those days, there was stationary machine. Single guy would drive somebody's bundle team or else pitch the bundles on in the field, see? And if you could sew sacks, you're pretty good, too. I could sew at least a sack up pretty fair, too, in those days.
Is that what'd you do well, mostly?
I didn't do much of that in the station there, but I got to do quite a bit of when they got horse-drawn combine, see? And then eventually, I never worked on the combine that was self-propelled. I worked on them. Well, I started on one ground pull, had 33 head horses on. Wheelers, you know what wheelers are, the one back next to me. They're strung out so goddamn far in advance, you know, that those wheelers like walking in horse shit up to the knees, by God. No, oh, I tell you, I had that many on it. I got to pull it, see, make it operate. I sewed sacks on that, and then I sewed sacks on it when it got down to, they had a motor on it to run it, and then the team just pulled it. And then they had to see this 12, 18, 21 head. We take that most of the time, see, if you had a one to draw 21, 20 feet, right? But yeah, I worked a lot of those things when I was a kid, you know.
You know, I'm trying to think about what it was like to be working around different places. It sounds really pretty fun to me. It sounds like a good way to live when you're young
I tell you, here's the thing, Sam. Nowadays, everybody they only want to do one thing, see? Now, why can't you do more? When you take the guy comes, he's a carpenter, he gets out of work, he gets draws rocking chair money. But there's another job coming up, by God, he can do, but he won't work at that, because he don't have to, see? By God, that's the whole damn thing about now. I did everything when I was a kid, by God. I did all those things. And I worked in restaurants, I cooked, night cook, I washed dishes. I hit a town, by God. And have a meal bag in an hour's time. Just go around to the restaurant. You need a dishwasher. And if a union shop, they may not have one, but they take you on to the union guy coming around and it lets you go, see? But I got lots of jobs by guys and kept it going. Oh, hell yeah. I went over to Seattle one time, didn't have a dime. The guy started a circus. I mean, rodeo. Had some horses. I never made any money on it, but eight. That's all I could say. Rode some horses, and the other guys
did. Would you go to an employment office, or would you just go?
Didn't have employment office in those days. They had these. They had employment office. They were the guys that run them for pay. See, they not yeah. State employment yeah. office. Didn't have anything like that. But you go buy a job. See, you paid so much for a job.
Is that what you do?
If you didn't have it, well, I didn't do it. Hell, no, I hustled my own job around. But some of the guys that, but they didn't have the money. Then they didn't. Take it out, you pay the guy, whoever you sent to, see? One time I was in Spokane, I thought I'd get a job the fall year, getting cold, long in November. Farmer wanted somebody to come out there, help do some chores and do a little fall plowing. Hell, I think it was $1 a day or something like that. Run out there to Marshall and got off the train there and walked across the field to the guy's place. And got dark, you know, then. Well, next morning, by God, he called me, it was still dark, and I got up and went downstairs, and it was 4 o'clock, by God. I just walked on back across the around to the railroad track and wait the next train come along. 4 o'clock in the morning to go to work for one of these goddamn sod busters, and he wanted you to work probably 8 o'clock at night. Yeah. So now that's why they had to, you know, if you could kept a guy right, you could have a lot of employment today. You listen to the wages so much, but he didn't take care of you right. Wanted to sleep out in the bunkhouse and like the woods for the IWW's got going, a crummy lice, you know, bed bugs to it, everything. Then they got it cleaned up. See, now, of course, they generally gypo loggers do most of it now anyway, see, but that was the whole thing back in those days, you know, it was really kind of rough going. All right.
Was Potlatch Lumber Company, they were like the farmers. They wanted to get away with whatever they could until...
Oh, they did, till the IWW. You know, hell, they fought the IWW's bag, and the farmers all blame. They blame the threshing machines to get a fire on the IWW. Well, I'll tell you what you could do. Back in the days, they had so damn much smut. I've seen it just pour out of these machines black. But if you took one of these here stick matches down into a head of wheat and throw it in there, hit those concaves, it's maybe going to light up, see, in that dust. But I don't know if they did it or not, but they used to say they did it, see.
It could have been smut caused by itself.
You're damn right it could have been. You betcha. Now, of course, they like WSU over here is particularly good at it. I guess other universities, too, they got a resistant-free smut thing. And look what they did in the might of of the yield you can get off of the grain. Gaines wheat, for instance, will give you no damn near double.
Didn't they say, like in them days, didn't they have a big campaign against the IWWs and then the newspapers and everything? Well, didn't they try to get everybody to be against them?
Well, they did. That's true.
IWWs did good work.
They did. They did. You betcha. Well, they tell you, it was something like a union. You got places now you can't do anything that you're wrong to a union, haven't you? And I don't think so. Unions are all doing as good for the people they should do. And the other day, even a month or two ago, they raised the pay up for low pay up to $1 or $2. Kind of.
You mean what he was doing was looking for another job?
Yeah, but he could, but in case he didn't get it, he wanted to be able to come back this one.
He said he had a boy to take his place.
Yeah, so we like, that's fine, you know. So anyway, because he could speak English, by God, and read it, he got to work in the bank, by God, you know, and he made a better job, see? Yeah. So they're not dumb by a damn sight. They're smart, you know. You know, after the War II was over, my brother was a master supply sergeant in the Army. And his first thing, he went to Shanghai, China, and lived in the biggest hotel there was there, right down in the north. Everything was fine. Had you get 100,000 mechs for $1 gold. But what they were doing is giving Shanghai check all this excess war supply that was out in the Pacific. They wasn't worth while bringing it back. It's the same old story you heard about in Vietnam. Padded payrolls, selling the stuff, you know, going like, well, that's how come the communists got enough stuff there. You got to take old Shanghai bag out of China.
How was that?
Well, his officer sold all the stuff bag out of
to the communists?
Hell yes. And Russia helped back up some of that too, you know.
He sold the stuff to them so they could.
We give it to Shanghai, check, but they give it to him. And Leonard was there to, you know. Of course, he said, hell, he had a lot of stuff. He traded that stuff off for anything he wanted, didn't he, too, you know. I just had the damn much stuff. Blankets, there was all kinds of stuff, you know, army stuff that I got to give away. Leonard was there. And then he was in Germany a couple of different times. I showed his picture of his wife.
He was going into town all the time and do their trading in Moscow. Mm-hmm. They'd come in and pretty much spend the day, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they would come in. And, of course, there were a lot of, just, you know, visiting a lot, too. They used to stand on the corner and spit tobacco juice at the curbs. No, they're fast and orders. No spitting on the sidewalk. You know that, Moscow, then?
No.
Well, yeah, they're fast and orders. I bet you find it in the books yet.
So what would people have to do, step off and spit in the street?
Yeah, they had to go out and spit off the curb. Yeah, but they stand there and spit tobacco. You mean probably how many men chew tobacco back in those early days. Smoked. My dad chewed tobacco all the time. He even went to bed at night to chew in his mouth. Swallowed the juice, I guess. He lived to be 77, but I got before he died of gangrene his leg.
Well, just visiting back and forth, was the town people and the country people very close to each other? I mean, did they know each other real good?
Oh, I think so, because we all had relatives, you know. Some lived in town, you know. Some out in the country, you know. There was relatives, you know. My grandparents lived in town. Then here we had uncles and aunts come to, you know, live in town, too, like that. We visited people out in the country, too, that were friends, you know. We got acquainted with and knew, you know. I know every once in a while. Well, take one respecter, one people named Seard. They had about 9 kids, and we had 7. Now, can you imagine, by God, taking the old buggy and loading us all in, going out to their place, hey guys, for a Sunday dinner, set up 3 tables about, and then maybe another Sunday they'd all come into our place, I don't know how many chickens they killed and fried by gosh and all that. Mother'd have hot bread. Yeah, all of those things, you know. It was just a nice thing to do, you know.
Would she bring out food for them, or would you, or would they do all the cooking for
they
you?
Do it all. They do it all when you go to their place. You didn't take nothing at all. You didn't take
any trade back and forth.
Yeah. Good. We raised lots of chickens, you know, had fryers to hell.
Would you
have.
Go back up? Would you go out there for a whole day?
Go, we'd leave in the morning, I think. Get out there. It took an hour to drive out to the place, maybe a little longer, and so on. Yeah, we'd go out, and the children would all go out and play, have a hell of a time, you know, running around, and so on like that.
Well, what's this? You know, I hear that country people were, you know, used to, town people used to call them hayseeds and pumpkin pushers. Were country people more backwards than town people?
Well, I tell you right now, they may not associate. We had people that come here that were the Swedes and Norwegians and some German and Russian, and I suppose a lot of them didn't speak English too much. But I don't know. We had children come into school, and they went to country school mostly, and it was damn sight cheaper on taxes if you had to country school today, too. We'd be better off, I think. And you solidate all these buses and so on. Look what they do. They can't go to school sometime. Hell, we used to walk through snow, but I got up to our hips, but I got to get to school when I was a kid. Yeah, I'm not kidding you. I walked from our place over there across to that place up on 738th Street when the snow was so deep and it froze on top. We walked under crust and you couldn't see a fence post. And those fence posts back again was about 5 feet off the ground.
Did
that's how much snow
there
was.
And sisters? Was that you?
Well,
together?
When we went to school, we went across there. There's my two older sisters, one sister older, and then one eventually two younger, you know. We went to school. Yeah, yeah. Then eventually moved to town, of course, you know, we did move in town. Like that, but yeah, man.
Oh,
yeah. We had some storms in those days. We had a lot of snow in those days, you betcha.
So but like the country people, did they have in the country farms and stuff, they didn't have as much money and stuff as the town people in those days. I mean, there was more status in town, wasn't there?
Well, I don't really know, but it seems like the thing of it is, all people in the country, they had their beef, they canned it, and they killed most in the fall where it could freeze some, and they had their pork, they had all the vegetables, that fruit tree. They didn't have to buy a hell of a lot. Grain was pretty cheap, but I couldn't get much out of that, but they had their milk, you know, and had hay ground, so on. They raised some horses and sold some horses like that, and some cattle, you know, like that, and they made a little money to spend, you know, but I think they did pretty well, but I guess I go. One time we had a cow. We had a old red cow, Durham cow. She's a hell of a good milk cow. And a fellow about a half a mile south of us, named August Nelson. I think the son got the place, and then the son-in-law farmed it. I think Fred lives in town. But anyway, we were just kids. And Dad gave me a silver dollar. Take the old cow bellowing like hell, bowling, you know, take her over there. Now, it was in the fall of the year, and they had just thrashed, and had a big straw stack. You ever see one of those straw stacks that's after a dictionary, you know, that's just thrashed? Well, I and the boys, the two boys, they were Theodore and Fred, just kids. I mean, I was probably 10 years old, you know, they're about the same. We went and took the old cow out there and had a halter on her and a chain. Well, of course, here come the bull, that was all right. We got the plan in the straw stack. Climbing up and rolling down, so on like that, and I lost a dollar there. But that old, I don't know how long we played, but that how many times the bull topped the cow, I don't know. But once she come fresh, she had twins, two bull twin calves by you. Well, Dad didn't want them, but he had a relative over here on Union Flat, the other side of Pullman, named Nassiger. And her mother wrote him a letter and said, if they wanted him, come up and get him. And he drove up with a buggy, just one seat. The very back had a place, oh, I'd say that wide, with lid lift up and down, seeing you underneath the back. Well, they put those two calves in a sack, a gunny sack, and cut a hole for their heads. And the way they tied the sack, they couldn't kick their legs around, and put them in there, their heads out, and that man took them over there to his ranch. He was an uncle of my father by marriage, see? He wasn't a blood relative. But and raised those calves. But she had twins, and I got because she'd give milk. She'd get 3 gallons out of her twice a day, that cow. I had lots of milk. Okay. But things happen.
You know,
well, I guess, what time are you getting to be, Sam?
I don't know.
Well, you know what it is? It's 10 minutes 12. News.
Okay,
news.
Let's try to finish up in 10 minutes and then I'll
leave. Oh, no, you can stay longer than that. Yeah, I'll stay longer than you want to.
Well, I just let's see, a couple things I want to ask you more. One is when you say your folks separated, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, I know that in the early days, anyway, to get divorced was frowned on. People didn't like it. It was hard on people to get divorced. Did your parents have any?
I don't think so. I don't think the nest to it. Mother and father agreed to disagree. That is all there is to it. He was in town so much, and Dad was. Had good quality about him in some ways, in some ways he didn't. I resented him to some ways, although I went with him. I always thought he thought more of his horses than his kids because of the bad weather. We walked to school and said, taking the school and the damn horses, see? I didn't think that much about a horse. And just those little things like that, you know, kind of bothered me about him. And he could have worked his team more. He was a teamster. He didn't work because I was hungry sometimes as a kid. I'll tell you right now, the old man could have did a lot better, see? And I think Mother could have buried down on him, made him do a lot better too, see? But, you know, you think about it, that time you didn't think about it, see? That like with me now, if I haven't got $50-$60 worth of groceries ahead all the time, I don't feel happy. My kids never hungry a day in their lives. I got all kinds of stuff here in the house. I got meat in the locker and everything, you know. I keep it up.
Well, do you think it was your mother's idea that she wasn't getting enough support from him?
I think it was. It was kind of the support. That mother came to town, did work too, and some of his kids helped her, you know, like that. You know, after my grandmother died, my grandfather was getting up years too. So he died in 20, so he went down and lived with him, and he died in 34, see? Or was it 33, 34 grandfather died? Well, grandmother had cancer too, and so mother sold, got this little place in divorce, and she sold that and paid off his mortgage, so he gave her the place when he died, see?
She got what place?
House that he had in town.
Oh.
We lived in that thing.
She got the house that your grandfather.
Yeah.
What did she do after they separated?
Mother worked out some. Then she started to do a lot of laundry at home. People bring laundry and so on like that. She did that some, you know, and different things. Oh, she didn't have to be. Those days you didn't have to make too awful much money, you know. We all helped out the kids, you know, at home, you know, everything to do. You know. And I came back in 1937. Like, I took care of Mother for 19 years, and stayed with me.
Was it hard, you think, for her to make it by herself?
Well, it was at first, you know, kids all home. Yeah, it was pretty hard, and all right, but I'd say she did it. She didn't work, all right, but she lived to be 81. Yeah, and she died at 81. She had heart near the artery, and you know, the blood, heart couldn't pump the blood to the brain. She'd have blackouts. I worked all hard with her. I used to go back the last year she lived before I got her to sister in Spokane and took her up there because she was able to take care of it. But my wife had died and I had these three little boys. She couldn't remember their names. And I'd go back by her a bit on this delivery, see she's all right, you know. Hard to get anybody to stay with her. That was a thing about the Christians, religion, the Christian church, you know. She went to that all her life here in Moscow. You know, she always put a little bit in the kitty every Sunday, you know. I'd give her money and things she needed. But she said, no, I never had one of those good old Christian souls behind God come out and sit with her all that time when I realized, you know, that one. And of course, she wanted to take my boys to Sunday school, which is all right when it's little, you know, and she went. I'd take them all and go get them. But remember this couple come out to the place after Mother had passed away because the kids weren't going to summer school. It's a Sunday school. So I told her, I said, no, I told her my name. I said, you only lived about 3-4 blocks from where I did. Not once did you come over there. Asked how she was or anything. I said, I had her in hospital, I had her in a nursing home, took her at home, did everything I could. Not once did any of you good old Christian souls. No, I said, I'll let my kids grow up and say what they want to do. I ain't going to push them to go to any church. But I didn't.
What did your father do after they separated? Oh, did he stay in town?
No, he ended up having a nice little place over at Palouse, and he did teaming around there, worked for the highway. He didn't take too much in those days. Go out through harvest with his team, bundle wagon, you know, he caught, make some money, and did some work, city and that thing. But eventually, when he got so bad, when he went to the county nursing home down at Colfax, you know, well, then they got all his properties he had there then.
Well, you said he had good qualities too. What was his digital?
I think, you know, he had no schooling much. His parents had separated too, and it was two families, you know, and he didn't like his father either. And his father, my grandfather, grandmother and his stepfather both buried up there at Farmington, you see. And I don't know, he brought my father and his sister out here, and the rest of the family didn't come. See, they well, my father was born in Springfield, Missouri, I think it was, Missouri, I guess it was, yeah. But my grandfather, I guess I told you, you read something about that one time, used to work, build railroads, you know, the grades it was, you know, and so on.
Well, where did they meet, your parents? Was it out here?
No, my father met in Kansas. He lived in Kansas where my father and mother were married in Kansas. And I don't know, my father had been out here and went back, and he'd been a teamster for the Army. Not, he didn't belong to the Army. He wasn't a soldier, but he was a teamster one time. And he met his family. He was taken so young from his father and after World War I that he was a teamster on the Mexican border. And some fellow said, there's a fellow in the Army here named Stephen. He said, well, like you didn't know, you know, if he had any relatives because his father never told him. But anyway, they met, see, and found out they were brothers, see. So eventually they came here, too. Franklin was the last one. Franklin died over here at Richmond. Will was killed here in Moscow. He killed himself, I'm sure he did. My father said he didn't have no bullets left or anything, you know. He only had a pistol to begin with. But he said he killed himself. But anyway, then Henry homesteaded down here on the Clearwater River across from Gatha. Some guy, my grandmother, lived with Will to begin with here. She was a German woman, and she couldn't speak hardly any English. Henry took her down there, and they had a little farm, right, 160 acres, had a hog or two, I suppose, and some cattle in the grease garden. Anyway, some neighbor got pissed off at him. It was dark, and he sat in the kitchen table like this, eating a knife, shot him through the window and killed him. Got 10 years out, did on a few years, my father said. But then he buried over Pullman's who will, and then Henry buried over there. Then my grandmother died, Helen, she died. Dad buried her there. Then
she saw two of her kids die.
Yeah, they were killed right there when she was in the house. Then when she passed away, Dad buried her there. That must have been about 19, 10, 11, but I don't know, I was pretty young. Then Franklin died over at Richland. Dad went and got him, brought him there.
Franklin?
That was my father's brother that he met down in Texas around the border there, and he got acquainted with the family that way. And then when father died, I buried him there. We got a plot over there with the four brothers and my grandmother buried, you know, in Pullman, so you got to take care of that over there.
There's one thing I was going to ask you about when Will died. That is, did you say that your grandmother went outside and waved a white flag?
Yeah,
or something?
Yeah.
What did she do?
Well, you see, there was a creek, you know, went through there. I told you. Yeah. Then that wheat field, you know, where that Circle K is out there, all that ground, that whole flat there was a farmland. They had a wheat field in there, and it was in August in the. Wheat had been bound like they saw those binders in a shock, see? And they was hiding behind shock, shooting at the house. The house had that hole in. So she come out waving, you know, that he was dead, see? Then they quit, see? Well, now that girl wrote that book, you know, they come to the ridge, said they threw him in a ice wagon and took him to town with a crock of bullshit. By God, my grandmother took him and buried him over in Pullman, see? She said, took him over there. My father got the stone and put it up. I know, because I went over there with him, and he put it up. I was pretty young. Drove a team of horses over there in a wagon.
I heard that, I read that they were so mad at some of these people in town that they actually took a bunch of guys went over, and they were going to move the cannon from the university over there, and they were saying they were going to knock the house down.
No, that's a bunch of shit fire. You know, Carl Smith knew him. And then there was another guy named Tom Cameron that knew my uncle. He said he was a hell of a good man. They did. That was the only two men when I got older to talk that knew him. See, the rest of them didn't know him. He shot Creighton. Of course, Creighton didn't say anything. But Creighton come out and sounded off something. And he killed Cool, shooting at Cool. All right, and Cool was shooting at him too, see. It was one of those things. But anyway, these people were gone. They don't know these things nowadays. They go back to the hearsay. They don't know shit in Shinola about it, see. They don't. I think my father come here then, and he was here before when they was here, knew more about it, you know. And the way my father got the place out there, they paid the taxes on it, got a tax deed, see?
The taxes on Will's place?
Or Will had it, yeah, Will had it. See, he was dead, and my grandmother passed away. He paid it, lived there and paid the taxes.
Did your father know Will very good?
No, he didn't, very little, because he didn't... It took Franklin to introduce him and tell him. See, then he did. That's why he's back east. You know what I mean?
What did he ever say about what Will was like, or what Franklin told him Will was like when he was a kid?
He didn't. He never said. He never talked much about his family. Dad never. I don't know why. And I guess when my father could speak German, and my mother didn't let him teach us German. We should have all learned to speak German as kids. But I don't know why. She was stubborn about it. She didn't want him to use it. I went to my father a lot of places. Old German people around the country. And Dad just rattled off German like hell with him. See, his father was born in Germany. See, he spoke it. And his mother spoke German.
Was your mother German at all?
No, no, English and Scotch, I think. I don't know.
So your father, did your father, were many of his friends German?
Well, he knew lots of people, and I suppose that'd just be normal. I know he went to help people. They spoke German, so Dad spoke German with him. A lot of people back in those days come, they speak a few words in English. I know that people here in town, there's a woman, think of her name, I will, after a while, the man, he learned speaking English, he was tatting. The wife, she could hardly get anything out of her in English. She couldn't spoke Italian, you know. But both of them were born in the old country and come here. Oh, I'm trying to think of their name. Shruti, the name was. They're both dead now. I know he's dead. I don't know whether the mother's alive yet or not. I know the boy died. He was World War II veteran. The girl that taught school up around Bonnet's Ferry and took her mother up there one time to live with her. So I don't know whether the old lady's alive or not now. She didn't speak English. Oh, she spoke a few words, but damn little, you know.
Who were the kind of people that used the pastime? I mean, was it mostly just Moscow people? Did farmers, loggers use it?
Yeah,
use it?
Sure. All come. It was like an employment bureau. They had some benches sitting outside. The guys come through in the fall, the farmers come along there, want a job and so on, see? You know, when the guy says, what kind of land you got? Oh, the farmer says, kind of rolling. He says, roll it in here and I'll shock it for you. Yeah, they'd go out and work. Shock and grain, work through harvest, so on. Oh, transit. Then local people got the job. But, you know, guys just travel back and forth. I used to go down to Dusky through there and start at harvest as a kid. And then it was about 3 weeks ahead of us, see? Get through and come up here. Get in maybe 35, 40, 45 days, you know. Yeah. Oh, what's his name getting pulled out here?